Good morning. Wasn't sure how many people would be able to actually be here this morning, and I appreciate you coming. I just want you to know, just so that you feel better maybe, I know some people were concerned since Terry and Kathy got the virus that maybe I might have gotten it. I was tested, and the test came back negative Thursday, so just wanted you to know that so that you can feel better about me being here with you this morning. Before I jump into the lesson, I want to talk about an experience that we just had, and Pam didn't know I was going to show this slide. That's her at the bottom in the yellow. But where we went for the past week, one of the main reasons we wanted to go the way that we went is to see this. This is in Kentucky, and this is a recreation of what the Ark might have looked like. I'm sure they didn't get all the details right, but they tried to follow the Bible's example, at least in the dimensions. And there's some speculation as to whether it was more like a box or more like a vessel like this. But this is the way they chose to go, the best information that they could find. And man, it is massive. It is incredible to see in person. You can see just the scale. That's the, that's not the long side. And it just shows you the height there. If I had another picture of the long side, you'd see just how incredibly long it is, tall it is, inside and everything. If you ever have an opportunity, it's a really wonderful thing because it just sort of takes the story of knowing the Ark to a personal level when you get to walk through this thing yourself. It is massive and incredible. And just to think 120 years of building this thing with all of the speculation and the hatred from the world. Wow. Anyway, that was neat. Our story this morning, however, is on a different topic. And if you would, you can go ahead and open up to John chapter 4. So, the Gospel of John is not considered a synoptic gospel. In fact, sometimes I use this apologetics Bible. It's made from the company Apologetics Press. I really appreciate this organization there in Montgomery, Alabama. I know some of the men that speak for Apologetics Press and that put some of their things together. We're going to use their material for VBS this past year. But this Bible that I'm using this morning is actually from them. It's called Defending the Faith Study Bible. I think I've seen one or two others that have this Bible. So it gives some different commentary from Apologetics Press defending the faith and things that happened in the Bible days that maybe can help your faith increase and give you more proof of existence and things that you can talk to others about. So I want to talk or read here what Apologetics Press put here at the very beginning of the book of John. Written by the disciple whom Jesus loved, the apostle John is believed to be the author, the son of Zebedee. He and his younger brother James were known as sons of thunder, Mark 3:17. His later life's work was done in Ephesus before he was banished to the island of Patmos, Revelation 1:9. Five New Testament books are attributed to him: the gospel account, John, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, and also Revelation. His gospel records differ from Matthew, Mark, and Luke, which are labeled synoptics because they parallel each other. John contains no parables. It apparently refutes Gnosticism's denial of the physical and human nature of Christ by accentuating physical aspects of Christ's person. Examples: his pain and death, his hunger and thirst, and even just him becoming tired. It also presents numerous personal interviews. So there's a little insight to just this one commentary on the book of John. So if you want to gain some more insight, maybe think about looking up this Bible from Apologetics Press. But John doesn't contain parables, maybe a little more personal account, and it has interviews with different people. And that's one that we're going to talk about this morning in John chapter 4, the interview with the Samaritan woman at the well. Before we dive into it, I want to ask you a couple of questions to think about. What are some things that make you you? What are some things that are unique to you that maybe you're proud of, that maybe people know you by, whether they be actual possessions, things that you collect, or just about you as a person, different attributes that you have? Maybe you're known for your movie quotes, and you've memorized all of these different movie quotes, and you're just a funny person, and people enjoy that about you. Maybe you're known for your fashion sense or your wardrobe. Maybe your athletic abilities and records that you've broken. Maybe you're known for foods that you create or for your baking skills. Maybe you're known for your sewing and you can make incredible outfits from nothing. Maybe you're known for your intellect and your academia. Maybe you're a quick-witted person and you can come up with a joke really easily and quickly. Maybe you're known for the way you have with children, your teaching abilities. Whatever you're known for, would you consider them essential to your person? Would you consider them as, if you didn't have those attributes or those things, that you wouldn't have your identity anymore? So I want you to think about that as we look through this story in John chapter 4 with Jesus and the woman at the well. It'll be basically covering John chapter 4, verses 1 through 30. We're not going to read it all, don't worry. So as we jump into this story, we can see here on this map that in verse 3, Jesus left Judea and departed to Galilee. But he needed to go through Samaria. So if you look on the map behind me, you can see Judea spelled a little differently. But then you go up to Galilee and you got to go right through Samaria. The thing is, if you were a Jew in this time, if you were a pious Jew, you probably wouldn't have wanted to go through Samaria. You probably would have wanted to go around Samaria somehow, some way, because that's just how much you hated Samaritans. That's just how much you didn't want to be around what you might consider a half-breed. And as I understand it, their disdain for Jews, Samaritans' disdain for Jews was similar. They didn't like them either. They didn't want to be around them either. They just didn't get along very well. But here, I find it interesting that the scripture actually says he needed to go through Samaria because really that's the direct route to get there. So as Jews would have been hearing this story, they would have viewed it very different than us. They would know these areas. They would know what it's like to get there. They might have gone around themselves and not gone through Samaria as they've gone to Galilee from Judea. So I find that interesting. And the way that the Bible relates it to us. So Jesus is going through, he goes through Samaria, and there was a well there. And Jesus stops at this well because he's tired. It's about the sixth hour, it says, so as I understand it, that would be high noon. And he's tired. He's been walking, traveling. He sees a well, and he waits there. The woman from Samaria comes to draw water. Let's pick it up in verse 6. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. I guess it took all of them to go and buy food. There were apparently none there with him, so he was by himself, and the disciples had gone to go get some food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask me for a drink. A Samaritan woman. See, she would have been as confused as anybody else hearing this story. Why are you here? Why did you maybe even come through Samaria? Why are you sitting at this well? And why are you asking me, not only a Samaritan, but a Samaritan woman, and then you're asking to get a drink from me? You really want a drink from my water pot? You really want a drink after me? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. And then, of course, we hear and we know, Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it was who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." So they're having this conversation at the well. And again, she's confused, maybe similar to Nicodemus. She's confusing physical things with spiritual things. And she says, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with. And the well is deep. How are you going to get this water out, Jesus?" "Where do you get that living water?" And then she asks maybe more of a rhetorical question. But she says, "Are you greater than our father Jacob?" Of course, Jesus knows exactly who Jacob is. He knew this well was his when he sat there. "The father of Joseph. Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock?" And so Jesus explains what living water means. Spiritual by nature, not physical water. And he says, "And you will never thirst again. And it will become a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life." Now, if you heard these words from Jesus and you were the Samaritan woman, don't you think you would have wanted the same, this great water that never ends and that springs up into everlasting life? She's still confusing physical with spiritual. And she wants this water. And she wants to never thirst again. And she doesn't want to have to keep coming back to this well. Does she appreciate the well? Sure. Does she want the well where it is? Of course, because she can come to it and get her water for the day to clean with, to bathe with, to cook with. All the things that we use for water. Water, as we know, is very, very essential, but we don't live the life she lives. We have running water, and we take it for granted. A lot of times in our lives, probably most of our life, we go to the tap and we turn it on. Such a simple process. She didn't have that. She knows what it's like to need water. You live about 3 days without water. You can live a lot longer without food. And she's like, "Let me have this living water so that I don't have to keep coming back to this well and drawing water out." By the way, what do you think this living water Jesus was talking about actually is? I was preaching a lesson different than this, but it had to do with living water. And a person came up to me afterwards and he asked me if I knew what the living water she was talking about was. And he took me to John chapter 7. So let's go there real quick. We'll come right back to it. This is just something for you to ponder on your own. Just something for you to study for yourself. John chapter 7, verse 38 through 39. And it says, we'll read it together. My pages were stuck together. Let's start with verse 37 of John chapter 7. "On the last day, the great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, 'If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water.' But this he spoke concerning the Spirit," capital S, "whom those believing in him would receive, for the Holy Spirit was not yet given because Jesus was not yet glorified." So you look at the similarities there, you study it on your own, think about what the living water he might have been talking to her about was. I always thought of it as spiritual in nature, obviously, everlasting life, heaven, things like that, and I do believe that that also would work because it's obviously spiritual in nature, but maybe more specifically, he's talking about the Holy Spirit here. But anyway, something for you to study on your own. Back to the story. Let's pick up in John chapter 4, verse 16. So he changes the subject, and he tells her to go get her husband and bring him here. And of course, Jesus knew she had no husband. Jesus knew that the man she was with was not her husband, and that she had had five husbands previous to him. He knew that. And when he said that, or when she told him that, of course, he agreed with her and he said, right, you've said. And she starts changing her tune because she sees this man now not just as a Jew that's coming through, but as a prophet. How could you know these things about me? You're not just a Jew that's asking me for water now. You've known things about my personal life. Something that she, I'm sure, is ashamed of, but at the same time, Jesus knew this about her. So she says, sir, verse 19, I perceive that you are a prophet. Jesus proceeds to tell her about worshiping God in spirit and truth. We use that phrase a lot when we say a prayer, when we are meeting together, let us worship God in spirit and truth. Well, here Jesus says it. It's something that we want to strive for. It's something that we want to do. We don't want to worship God in vain. We want to worship him in spirit and in truth. And that's what he says to her. And then Jesus, after she brings it up, talking about the Messiah and when the Messiah comes, he goes ahead and he tells her that he's the one they've all been waiting for. He is that man. He's not just a prophet. He's actually the Messiah, the chosen one, the Son of God, there, right there in front of her, talking to her about this living water, this everlasting water that she could have. And then his disciples come into the picture, and they marveled that he was talking with her. But interestingly, if you read, no one actually said anything to him about it. Isn't it funny how we have sometimes, we meet with a teacher or with our boss or whatever, and they say something or they do something that's really odd, but we don't want to bring it up because we don't want to be embarrassed. We don't understand what they're doing or why they're doing it, but we don't want to ask them about it. I guess that's what Jesus' disciples did here. They marveled at it, but they didn't actually say anything. But the part that I really want to focus on is in verse 28. And I want to read it with you. After his disciples came back, after they had had this long conversation, verse 28, the woman left her water pot. And she went her way into the city, and she said to the men, come see a man who told me all the things that I ever did. Could this be the Christ? Seems to me like she was already convinced this was the Christ, but maybe she didn't want to be embarrassed. Maybe she didn't want to say something and be chastised for making such a bold statement. But she said, come see this man who told me all the things that I ever did. Could this be the Christ? And of course, when she was talking to Jesus before, one of the things that she said that the Messiah would do was tell them all things. The Messiah would come and tell us all things. And here she is telling these men, she's found this man who's told me all things that I ever did. Could this be the Christ? So I want to ask you, how essential was her water pot in her life? What did she come to the well in the first place to do? She came to get water. She came to fill up her water pot and to take it back so that she could have that for the day, or however long it would last until she had to come back and fill it up again. And yet the Bible records she left her water pot to go into the city and to tell people about Jesus. Why did it give us that little detail? Why did it say in verse 28, the woman left her water pot? Why couldn't the Bible just say, and then she left and went into the city and told people about Jesus? Could this be the Christ? But it gave us that one detail. As we know, water is essential to our life. Water was essential to them, and they had a much harder time getting it. So for you this morning, I want to ask all of us, do you have any water pots? Do you have anything in your life that seems essential, but when compared to Jesus, it's just weighing you down? When compared to Jesus, some of the things that you would feel make you you are just holding you back from talking about Jesus. Maybe they're your movies that you watch. Maybe your fashion sense and your wardrobe. Maybe your constant devotion to sports, your practice and your athletics. Maybe the vehicles that you own. Maybe you fix them up and make them something better, and it just is your life's work. Maybe the boats that you want, the tractors that you have, the tools that you want to possess. Maybe you already have a great collection and you go and just look at it sometimes. And you just look at that collection that you have. You know, I love tools. And I have more than I need. But it's hard for me when Pam says, hey, why don't you make a bed for Jonah? I'll let you have a new table saw. It's hard for me to say, oh, no, I don't need a new table saw. I know what it's like to want things, to collect things. And maybe that's the same for you. Maybe it's things that you never even think about being in your way. You just think of them as stuff that you do. Making your foods, baking, your excellent sewing skills, your intellect, your own intelligence, your quick wit. And could it even be you're too prideful about your attributes with your teaching abilities or the way that you are with your children? I'm not saying any of those things are bad. I'm not saying any of those things are wrong. But sometimes they become our water pots. Sometimes they seem so essential to our life that they weigh us down. And if we would just set them aside, we could go and talk about Jesus. They get in our way. We see them as essential and making us who we are, but they're just water pots we need to set aside and go and tell people about Jesus in our life. Come see this man who knows everything about me. And he came to see me and to see you. Not only did he come here to this earth, but he died for you. Because we couldn't finish the task ourselves, because we're going to sin. We can't make it to heaven on our own. We've got to have God's grace through Jesus Christ. And so he did that thing, not to set up his kingdom here on earth, but to die for us to set up the kingdom. One of the phrases of the kingdom is here, right here at the church. We are his kingdom. Not so that we can take over the world, but so that we can show the world Christ. The more we love what's in this world. You know, Brother C.B. Laney said a prayer this morning, and I think he got choked up because he's thinking about how God sometimes seems forgotten. And more, the world wants to focus on other things. And we've got all this sickness that keeps us apart. And we've got all these things that are battling against God. And then we hold up our water pots, the things that we're so proud of, and yet we don't speak a word about God. We don't speak a word about Jesus in our life. And I do it too. The more we love within this world, the harder it is to lead this world during our physical life to focus on God. But the conundrum is we only have this physical life to choose to live spiritually. This is it. To set down our worldly water pots and talk about Jesus. To stop planning each day with our own distracted, busy schedules, and to actually talk to your family, to your children, to your grandchildren, to your parents about Christ in your life. Do you see things that God creates and point that out to your children, to your grandchildren, to your family? Do you have those discussions in daily life and stop to say a prayer and stop to say, God made that? This isn't even the best world. The best world we broke. Man broke through sin. This is the fallen world that we're living in now, and it's still beautiful. Can you imagine what heaven will be like? Do you have those discussions with your children and see the arc in the scriptures and put it to life and say, we did this not because it's a fun story, but because the world was evil and God tried to fix it again and again and again. And now the ultimate fix is Christ. And what we've got to do is follow him. And what we've got to do is live for him. Do you have those discussions with your neighbors and your brothers and your sisters? And if we did, how much closer would we be to Jesus? And do you study him more so that you can actually understand what he wants for you to do? Do you pray to him more and focus on him more and leave your water pots of this world so that you can talk about Jesus? Go back to John chapter 4. We talked about this, but we didn't specifically read this verse. Verse 23. But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeing such to worship him. That's what he wants. That's who he wants to see worship him. True worshipers who worship in spirit and truth. They don't worship him in vain. They actually mean what they're saying. They actually are thinking about it. They're actually reading his scriptures, not making up their own rules. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. Do you have any water pots that you need to set down so that you can talk about Jesus? If there's anything that we can do to help you this morning to come back to Jesus, or to come to Jesus for the first time through baptism, becoming a Christian, a child of God, joining the family, the kingdom. If you have any of those needs, we urge you to come right now as we stand and sing.